Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Okay, thank you. What about that video? Vets or corroborates the 507-46 Lexus time on the power on event.
Objection, Your Honor.
A little bit more before you get to that, Mr. Burrell.
Okay. Did you use the video that we just saw in an attempt to vet or corroborate the timestamp for the power on event on the Lexus?
Yes, I did.
How did you do that?
Sure. So looking at the start timestamp on the video, we can see that the video starts at approximately 507.58. Keeping in mind this timestamp is coming from the camera or the ring video, the ring camera itself. And when we look at the power on event, we see that it occurs at 507.46. So although we don't see the actual time of the power on event, that is consistent with what we would expect.
What does the video on the right help us do?
So video on the right helps us do the same thing. So when we look at the power off event that occurs at 546.20, again, when we look at the ring video on the right, that start timestamp of that video is 546.29. So again, we miss the power off portion of when that occurs, but that is consistent, again, with what we would expect.
Could we play the video on the right? If you could enlarge, that would be helpful. If not. Stop the video, please. Mr. Burgess, you see the lights are on that vehicle?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Can you tell if the vehicle's on or off at that point?
Sure. So I cannot tell if the vehicle is on or off at that point. Typically, when you power off a Lexus or a modern vehicle, the lights will stay on for some portion of time afterwards. But again, that is consistent with the timestamp from the power off event.
And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of the power on and power off events as they pertain to the Lexus clock?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
And that is that those timestamps are accurate to the second.
Did you further follow the data to see if there was any other power on, power off events relative to the Lexus for January 29, 2022?
Yes, I did.
Could you take us to Exhibit 34, please? What is this, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is the next time that the vehicle is powered on and subsequently powered off. That power on event occurs at 12:35:01. The power off event occurs at 2:12:01. And then this video is a video from alarm.com surveillance that depicts the vehicle pulling into a driveway and shutting off. So when we look at the video and we watch the video, you can actually see at 2:12:01 in the video timestamp that the windshield wipers stop moving and the vehicle suspension begins to lower, indicating that the ignition button has been pressed.
Let's start with the power on event. Was there any video available to show the power on event at 12:35:01?
There is no video available that I'm aware of.
On the last slide, you had the power off event at 5:46:20 a.m.
Correct.
Was there any other power on, power off events between 5:46:20 a.m. and this event here?
No, there was not.
Did you try to obtain any collateral or cooperative video or evidence relative to the power on event of 12:35:01?
I did request or make a request to see if there was any video available, and as far as I'm aware, there was not.
Regarding the power on event, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of the power on event as it relates to the Lexus clock on the system?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
That is that power on event is accurate to the second in reference to the Lexus clock.
12:35:01 p.m.
Correct.
And do you have an opinion as to the power off event to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy from the data you recovered from the SD card?
Yes, I do. And that power off event again occurred at approximately 2:12:01 according to the Lexus clock.
I don't know if you can enlarge the video, Ms. Gilman, but if you can, and if not, could you play anyways? Thank you. And could you explain for us the graph on the bottom of that exhibit? Of that diagram?
Sure. So that graph, again, is just a timeline, a graphical representation of when that power off event occurred and when the power on event occurred and when the power off event occurred at 2:12:35:01 and 2:12:01.
Based on the data you analyzed from the SD card, was there any further power on and power off events on January 29, 2022 after this 12:35:01 to 2:12:01 event?
Yes, there was.
Could you display for us page 35, Ms. Gilman? And what is this, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is the next power on event that is recorded within the system. And that power on event occurs approximately 4:11:46, and the power off event occurs at 4:12:56. The video we see is that same alarm.com surveillance video. The start timestamp of that video is 4:12:03. So again, we don't see the actual power on and off event within the video, but it is consistent with what we would expect as the power on event occurring at 4:11:46. And then the video starting, and we see the car backing up at 4:12:03.
Would the alarm.com be using a different clock than that of the Lexus?
It would be, yes.
And based on your methodology and vetting and testing in view of the data on the SD card, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the time of this power on event?
Yes, so that power on event would be 4:11:46.
And do you have an opinion as to the time of the power off event related to this diagram?
Yes, that would be 4:12:56.
Is that opinion as well to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, it is.
Is that a photograph or a video?
That is also a video.
Ms. Gilman, could you help us? Thank you. And similarly, does the graph give a general idea of the time?
Yes. So similarly, the graph is a timeline representation of the power on and power off event.
Mr. Burgess, was there an additional power on, power off event after the power off event at 4:12:56 p.m. at the Dighton residence?
Yes, there was.
Ms. Gilman, could you show us number 36, please? Mr. Burgess, could you take us through this one?
Sure. So this is the next power off or power on event that occurs. And that power on event occurs at 5:34:51 p.m. The power off event occurs at 5:36:42. Again, the video that is associated with this does not show the power on or the power off event, but it shows the time just before the vehicle is arriving to this location on a tow truck, and that would be consistent with the vehicle then being powered off and backed off of the tow truck at that time.
And based on your analysis of the data, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty what time this power on event took place?
Yes, and that time would be 5:34:51.
And that's according to the internal Lexus clock?
Yes, it is.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty when this vehicle was then powered off?
Yes, and that would be 5:36:42.
Again, pursuant to the Lexus clock?
Correct.
After this event at 5:34:51 p.m. to 5:36:42 p.m., when you studied the data, were there any other power on or power off events for this Lexus vehicle on January 29, 2022?
Not that I studied after this event.
Could you take that down, please? Now, we touched on an issue earlier. I want you to give your opinions and explain to the jury. You mentioned the word variance between different items. I don't think you used the word items. You said something else.
Sure. So that's going to be the clock variance between different devices. So in this instance, what we're referring to is the difference in the clocks of the Lexus module and an iPhone. So we would not expect those clocks to be perfectly synced. Typically what we see and is what is generally accepted is a clock variance of up to 60 seconds. And that is because when you think about when you're looking at your radio and you're looking at the clock, it's representing to you the hours and the minutes. It's not representing the seconds. So again, it's accurate. Its function is to be accurate to the minute, but its function is not to be accurate to the second.
Is a variance between different devices an accepted concept in your community?
Yes, it is an accepted concept in my community.
When you were looking for power on, power off information from the data on the SD card, what clock would that information, that time, be dependent on?
Sure, so that's gonna be dependent on the Lexus clock. That Lexus clock is continuously running, but it also syncs up with GPS systems to update the clock on occasion. We do not know how frequent that activity occurs because that is proprietary to the manufacturer themselves.
To bring us back, when you started this case, there were two important text stream events?
Correct. There were two text stream events.
Remind us what those were?
Sure. So one is going to be associated with a three-point turn, and the other is going to be associated with a backing maneuver.
In those two text stream events, are they related in any way to the running clock that is on the text stream data?
Sure. So when we think back, the text stream events have that running clock from ignition on. And because we know the power on events from the infotainment module, we can reconcile when those time counts occurred.
If there's information about timing from text stream data on the Lexus, what would you have to do if you took a separate device like an iPhone and you wanted to reconcile the variance?
Sure. So if we want to reconcile the variance, what we would need is we would need an event that occurs that both clocks record. So for instance, if you've got two cameras that are recording you jumping up and down, you would take your motion of jumping up and down or your event of jumping up and down, and you would use that event to sync the clocks of those two cameras. So essentially, we're doing the same thing with the Lexus clock and the iPhone clock.
When you did your analysis during this case, initially, did you have any interest in trying to reconcile those clocks?
No, I did not.
Why not?
Because that is generally accepted that the clock variance is up to 60 seconds. And while reviewing the power on and off events and comparing that to the surveillance videos that were provided, that was consistent with what we would have expected.
Did something compel you to further your study and compare the Lexus clock information on those two text stream events, the three-point turn and the backing maneuver, to a different device?
Yes, there was a claim of attempting to synchronize those two clocks that I believed was potentially misleading.
So based on reviewing that information and coming to that conclusion, did you on your own do any further study about the difference in clocks and attempt to synchronize them?
Yes, I did.
You said that you can synchronize if you have more than one device identifying a particular time. What did you mean by that?
Sure, so if we've got two devices that are recording a similar event, so let's say, for instance, a three-point turn, if that is recorded with an iPhone, with the iPhone's clock, we can compare that event to the time that that event occurs and is recorded by the Lexus.
Were you aware of any device other than the Lexus recording that three-point turn?
Yes, I was.
What were you aware of?
That would be an iPhone from Mr. O'Keefe.
Did you have data and information from Mr. O'Keefe's phone some time ago?
I did have partial location data from Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
Did you do something with his iPhone data as it relates to the Lexus clock on those two events, the three-point turn and the backing maneuver?
I did on the three-point turn, yes, and the backing maneuver.
Okay. Tell us what you did.
Sure. So I looked at when the three-point turn occurred within the iPhone data and the location data in reference to that clock, and then looked at the same three-point turn event as it was recorded from the Techstream and the Lexus clock.
At some point, did you have enough data to make that full analysis?
Yes, I did.
Now, as a general concept, before we get to the three-point turn in detail, I want to turn to page 39 of your PowerPoint. I'm sorry, if you could turn to page 38, please. Okay. Can you explain to us the concept of synchronizing clocks?
Sure. So this is kind of a graphical representation of how to synchronize a clock. So essentially, like I said, we're taking a event that occurs. In this instance, it's a three-point turn. We have data that, where that three-point turn is recorded within an iPhone, and we have data where that three-point turn is recorded within the Lexus. Those events have clocks associated with them. So in order to reconcile the difference in those clocks, we are comparing the clock times for the event from each device and moving or adjusting the clock for one compared to the other.
In addition to specializing in data and computers and cars, you also mentioned that you specialize in mobile phones.
Yes, I do.
Did you use your experience in your training and your education to analyze the iPhone data from Mr. O'Keefe's phone as it related to the information from the Lexus vehicle?
Objection, Your Honor.
Can you answer that, yes or no?
Yes.
Just answer that, yes.
Yes.
You did?
I did.
Okay. Did you see what type of information was being stored on Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone as far as location data?
Yes, I did. In reference to location data, Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone is recording timestamps, GPS position, speed, and heading. So heading is going to be the direction that the iPhone is facing.
Was there any particular application that you were aware of that he was using?
Yes. As far as I'm aware, he was using the Waze app for navigation.
Could we have number 39, please? Could you tell us what this shows, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So specifically what we're looking at within the location data is a two-minute window. So that two-minute window we see here graphically plotted on a map. And we see, it's hard to tell, but you can see a white dot, which is the center of a radius for a GPS position. The orange circles are the horizontal accuracy for each one of those positions. And then down here, you can see a black line that is coming off of each GPS position that represents the heading or the direction that the iPhone is facing.
You mentioned you had some materials from Mr. Whiffen. Did you ever see any materials from Mr. Whiffen regarding location data that was acquired through the application Waze?
Yes, I did see a report by Mr. Whiffen.
Did you rely on his report, or did you independently, on your own, test the location information?
Sure. So I independently, on my own, looked at the location data from Mr. O'Keefe's phone.
This diagram that we see with all the points on it, is this developed from your own independent view and review of Mr. O'Keefe's location data?
It is.
To the top left is a round circle. What does that indicate?
Sure, so top left. So yeah, so that's gonna be, again, the GPS coordinate beginning for this 2 minute interval that we're looking at. The orange circle is going to be the horizontal accuracy for that GPS point.
And then bring us down and up to the left. There seems to be a bigger circle on the top.
Sure. So as we come down, believe what is Cedar Crest, and go up Cedar Crest, we have a position where the course heading of the iPhone changes, the speed lowers, and we have a lot more GPS points in a centralized location. So that's why you see that overlapping circles in that location.
When you're following and analyzing Mr. O'Keefe's location information, does this in any way relate to the first of those two text stream events that you originally were focused on?
It does relate to the first text stream event, which identifies a three-point turn.
And again, although you're not an accident reconstructionist, do you know if there's data that was captured regarding this three-point turn as far as an event?
Yes, I'm aware of data that was captured during that three-point turn event.
If we could turn to page 40, please. I want you to explain to us how this chart works. What does a point mean?
Sure. So when we were initially provided the location data, again, we were provided a partial view or a partial data set of that location data. And within that Excel spreadsheet that data was provided in, it was identified as GPS points. So what we've got here is we've got the partial data along with the full data set that I was provided later on. So we've got a couple columns here. So we've got point, which is GPS point from that partial initial data set that I was provided. We've got timestamps. So these timestamps are every second. With every second, there is a latitude and a longitude recorded, as well as a horizontal accuracy, a speed, and again, a course heading.
When you looked at data point 154, is there a time ascribed to that?
There is a time described to that as 12:23:58.
Before you did this more in-depth analysis, were you relying on anything beyond point 154, that one line?
No, so that was the only thing that was being relied on at that time.
Why?
Because again, we were initially provided a partial data set of the location.
And why didn't you seek earlier on to break this down with more specificity?
Again, because the generally accepted clock variance is of up to 60 seconds, and that data was consistent with everything else we were seeing, so there was no need to look any further.
And what compelled you again to look further?
A claim of misinterpreting and a misleading calculation trying to adjust these clocks.
Were you given a report?
I was not given a report. I was giving a PowerPoint presentation.
I see. When you decided to delve deeper into this, was that on your own initiative or were you requested to do it?
That was on my own initiative.
Now, rather than simply relying on point 154, what does breaking it down with all of the times and numbers between the green and orange do for your analysis?
Sure. So breaking it down, we can see between the green. So the green highlighted in green is position or timestamp 12:23:59. What we see happening before that time is the speed is pretty consistent between 15 and 8 miles per hour. The speed starts to drop at that point. And if we look at the course heading, we can see that the course heading before that time is pretty consistent as well, between 339 and 348. So that is, at position or at time 12:23:59, the speed drops and the course heading changes from, approximately 360, so straight north, to 284, which is in a northwesterly direction. After that time of 12:23:59, the speed recorded is zero. The course heading is 352. And at time 12:24:07, you see the speed pick back up and the course heading is around 179 degrees. So it's going to be in a southern direction. So based on this information, we can tell that the vehicle between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07 made a three-point turn maneuver, changing from the northern direction of heading to the southern direction.
Is this data generated from Mr. O'Keefe's phone or from the Lexus?
Sure. So this data is generated from Mr. O'Keefe's phone.
Where you initially relied on 154 as a timestamp to identify the time and location of the car at a later point, does this give you more of a benefit breaking it down?
This does give you more of a benefit breaking it down.
The zeros and the speed, what does that indicate to you as far as the data relative to the portion of the three-point turn?
Sure. So it doesn't necessarily mean the vehicle is at 0 miles per hour. Again, if you look at the horizontal accuracies, we've got anywhere between 16 and 29 feet. So that's the range in the GPS and what it's seeing. So if the car is, you know, slightly moving or moving like you would expect during a three-point turn, you would expect to see that speed at, you know, 0 miles per hour.
Did you develop a photograph with some detail to explain this in more of a picture format?
Yes, I did make a graphical representation of this.
If we could have 41, please. Could you break this down for us, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is, again, a zoomed-in version of the map that we showed earlier. And what we've done is we've cleaned out or just removed, for the sake of simplicity, the other points leading north to this point and the points leading south. Those are going to be those 0 mile per hour indications. So what we're looking at is the heading change and that speed change, which occurs at 12:23:59. And you can see the heading change from the black arrow leading off of the center radius of the GPS position. And then at 12:24:07, you see the heading change to a southern direction, and then the other GPS points are consistent with the vehicle moving southbound on Cedar Crest.
So the claim that you analyzed, did that actually compel you to analyze and identify a more accurate variance than you originally had?
It did.
And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty what the variance is between the clock on the defendant's Lexus on January 29, 2022 and Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone on January 29, 2022?
Yes, I do.
And to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, what is that variance?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained. Need a little more, Mr. Brain.
Okay. After you studied timestamp 154, what did that help you do? What did you learn from that?
Sure. So after studying timestamp one or GPS point 154 and these further GPS positions, we're able to identify the approximate, you know, time that the three-point turn occurred according to Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone data. So now we've got that event of when that three-point turn occurred. Now we can compare that to the three-point turn from the Techstream data and that running clock. Again, what we're doing is taking the power on event at 12:12:36 and adding the time count from the Techstream data to come up with the time of 12:23:38 in the Techstream data. So the Techstream data indicates a three-point turn ended or a trigger event, a text stream event ended at approximately 12:23:38. The iPhone indicates that a three-point turn occurred between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07. So since we've got that shared event between the two devices, we can reconcile any type of clock variance. So adjusting the Lexus clock to the iPhone clock, we can calculate that clock variance.
Is this a methodology that is commonly used in your practice?
It is.
Is it commonly used in the scientific community which you're part of?
It is.
Are there scholarly papers about this type of methodology in comparison of synchronizing clocks?
There are.
One of the papers you wrote, did that have anything to do with synchronization of clocks?
It did not have anything to do with synchronization of clocks, but it had it was relative to how accurate the timestamps are of events from iPhones.
And that was one of your peer-reviewed papers?
Yes, it was.
And are there scholarly journals and studies on the synchronization of clocks?
There are, yes.
Did you use that methodology in your analysis to come to arrive at an opinion about the time variance between the defendant's Lexus and Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
The clock variance is between 21 and 29 seconds.
If we could have number 42, please. What is this, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is, if we think back to the last slide, we've identified the three-point turn event in both the data sets. So now if we want to adjust one clock to the other, we can do that. And doing that, we've identified that the variance is between 21 and 29 seconds. So we would need to adjust the Lexus clock forward by 21 to 29 seconds to synchronize it with the iPhone data. So in doing that, the end of text stream event 1162.1 goes from 12:23:38 to 12:23, between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07.
These two clocks, one on the left being the Lexus clock that reads 12:23:38 a.m., and the other clock on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone has a different time, 12:23:59 to 12:24:07. Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty if these two clocks pertain to an event that's happening at the same time or a different time?
Yes. So these two clocks are, we are synchronizing these clocks to an event that is happening at the same time.
This is relative to the first text stream event, the three-point turn. You said there was a second text stream event that you were analyzing.
Correct. There is a second text stream event.
And what is that second text stream event?
That second text stream event is a backing up maneuver.
Are you familiar with the time frame on the Lexus clock relative to that second text stream event?
Yes, I am.
And what is that time frame?
So it is approximately 19 minutes from the ignition on. Okay.
And do you know what time that is on the Lexus clock?
Yes, I do.
With the court's permission?
Yes.
So that is going to be 12:31:43. Is going to be the end of that text stream event.
That text stream event, by the way, when it captures data, how long, what window of data does it capture when there's a text stream event or a triggering event?
Sure. So when the trigger occurs, it captures data 5 seconds before and 5 seconds after the trigger.
What if the event is less than 10 seconds?
So if it's less than 10 seconds, it would capture the entire event. If it's more than 10 seconds, it would only capture a partial snapshot of that event.
And so when you talk about the data for the backing event, is that the 10-second window you're speaking of?
Yes, that is that 10-second window.
Does that have anything to do with defining the length of the actual event?
No, it does not.
Okay. When you looked at the time from the Lexus clock regarding that backing event, did you do an analysis of John O'Keefe's phone considering the variance that you identified?
Yes, I did. So I applied the same variance to that second text stream event.
When you apply that variance between the Lexus clock and Mr. O'Keefe's phone, what is the, could I turn to 43, please? What is the time of that event if we're referring to Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Sure, so that the time of that event with the clock variance adjusted is 12:32:04 to between 12:32:04 and 12:32:12.
And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of that time from Mr. O'Keefe's phone considering the variance?
Yes, I do.
And what is your opinion?
And that the opinion is that the text stream, the second text stream event ends between 12:32:04 and 12:32:12.
When you say text stream event, that's the 10-second window?
Correct. That's the 10-second window.
Does that necessarily include the entire event?
No, it does not.
The graph on the bottom, what does that show us? It looks a little bit overwritten.
Yeah, so that graph is a timeline representation of the text stream event ending being adjusted with the 12:32:04 to 12:32:12 in comparison with the last lock event that is recorded by Mr. O'Keefe's phone at 12:32:09.
Your analysis relative to the data that you obtained from the SD card, is your analysis and opinions separate from the other information you looked at that corroborated or supported your analysis?
Yes, they are.
I have no further questions.
Lights, please. That's as good as they can be, huh? One's burnt out. I'll see Counselor Tether. The lunch is in here, so this seems like a good plan, so we'll get a little more light in here for a bit. You folks are all set. We'll take a 45-minute lunch and recess.
Okay, thank you.
All rise for the court, please. Jurors, close your notebook to follow me. Court is back in session. You may be seated.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Leslie.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Burgess.
Good afternoon.
You spell your first name Shannon with one N. Do I have that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
You describe yourself as a digital forensic examiner, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You use the term forensics often in your analysis.
Yes, I do.
And would you agree that generally, the accepted definition of forensics is something that relates to, that's used in, and is suitable for a court of law?
Yes, I would.
And so when you're working in forensics, even in your office, you understand that eventually it's very likely that whatever work you're working on is going to end up or could end up in a court of law, correct?
Correct.
And you mentioned in your direct examination the scientific method, right?
Correct.
And I was pleased to hear mention of the scientific method. And I just want to get cover some principles with regard to the scientific method. But before I do, I just want to see how forensics envelopes in certain items. So forensics applies scientific methods and principles to legal matters, particularly in criminal investigations, right?
Correct.
It's a fair statement.
Yes.
Thank you. And forensics are used to help lawyers in their preparation, correct?
Yes, that'd be correct.
And it's used to help judges in courts of law?
Yes, that is correct.
And it's also used to help juries and jurors to understand the results of scientific tests, correct?
Correct.
So you know, and you have to presume that as you are performing your analysis, as I stated earlier, that this information is going to end up in a court of law?
Correct.
And then does that heighten sort of the analysis that you need to do and the sharpness and the accuracy, given that it's going to end up in that form?
It can, depending on context.
And is the primary goal of forensic science to uncover the truth and to provide objective evidence that can be presented in a court?
Yes, it is.
Would you generally agree that the work of forensic science, including the work that you do, is intended to be used in court because scientific evidence can be very powerful and therefore the forensic science must be accurate?
Correct.
It must be methodical?
Correct.
There must be a method, right?
Right.
It must be detailed?
Yes.
And above all, it must be unbiased and truthful, correct?
That is correct.
And all of this, is it fair to say, distills down to reliability?
Correct.
And reliability is a desired characteristic of the forensic scientist.
Yes.
You want people to be able to rely upon your work.
Yes.
And credibility and honesty is part of reliability, and it's a fundamental component of that, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
You've stated that you hold your opinions to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty. You said that several times on direct, correct?
Correct.
And because the discipline of forensics involves the application of the scientific method, as you stated on direct, you therefore, of course, applied the scientific method throughout your analysis, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Would you agree with the following statement of the scientific method? And tell me whether, well, let me start with, you understand, you know, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST?
Yes, I am familiar, yep.
And would you agree with a definition of the scientific method as the systematic pursuit of knowledge involving the recognition and definition of a problem, the collection of data through observation and experimentation, analysis of the data, the formulation, evaluation, and testing of hypotheses, and where possible, the selection of a final hypothesis? I know there's a lot there, and if you'd like me to break any of it down, you let me know.
No, I find that generally acceptable. Yep.
And I wanted to emphasize the end, the evaluation and testing of hypotheses, and where possible, the selection of a final hypothesis. You understand what I'm meaning by hypotheses?
Yes, I do.
The scientific method is used, among other reasons, is it not, to avoid certain biases in the science process, correct?
Yes, that's
right.
Correct.
So the method is trying to prevent a scientist, not cultural bias, but scientific bias, correct?
Correct.
Do you know what the American Academy of Forensic Scientists refer to as cognitive biases in science, generally?
No, I do not.
Have you heard of the term confirmation bias?
Yes, I have heard of that term.
Have you heard of the term anchor bias in the scientific method?
I have not heard that term.
Let's start with confirmation bias. Is a fair definition, and you said you're generally familiar with that, right?
Yes, correct.
So let's start with that. Is that, that's the practice of sort of selectively gathering and interpreting evidence to confirm the scientist's belief or a belief of another, and at the same time neglecting evidence that contradicts them. Is that a fair definition of confirmation bias?
Yes.
And an example of confirmation bias is not considering alternative hypotheses once an initial hypothesis has been selected, even though the data and other information might contradict the initial hypothesis. Fair statement?
Yes, that's a fair statement.
And confirmation bias, although sometimes it occurs, is intellectually and analytically antithetical to its opposing of the scientific method, correct?
Correct, yes.
And it's to be avoided.
Right.
Anchor bias is, and I know you said you didn't recall it, but let me see if this triggers a recollection. If not, fair enough.
Okay.
Anchor bias is when you prioritize information and data that support your initial impression of the evidence, even where the impressions are incorrect, or it's unknown whether the impression is incorrect. You sort of anchor into that. Does that sound like a reasonable definition of anchor bias?
Yes, that sounds reasonable.
So biases are to be avoided in the application of scientific matters and methods because they can lead to incorrect conclusions in science, right?
Right.
And even though they're to be avoided, you called this case a homicide even before you began your alleged scientific testing. Isn't that correct?
I don't recall. Where would I have called it a homicide?
Do you recall your January 30th, 2025 report that you prepared in this case?
Yes, I do.
Do you have it with you?
I do.
Can you turn to page 4, footnote 3, please?
Yes.
Footnote, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It is page 4, footnote 3. And in page 4, footnote 3, it states, I'm sorry, sir, are you there?
Yes, I am, sorry.
It says, evidence review by the defense counsel Ray O'Keefe, MV homicide. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Now, you assumed in that, in the very beginning, that Ms. Reed had hit Mr. O'Keefe with her car before you began the scientific testing that you had discussed in your direct.
No, that would be incorrect.
But you did list homicide down in footnote 3, correct?
Yes, I did.
And so this report's drafted January 30th, 2025, correct?
Correct.
And the testing, I'll just give you a snapshot, some of the testing you discussed with Mr. Brennan, that testing didn't occur until after this trial started, correct? Some of the testing you described in direct?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, so that testing didn't even occur in the trial, just assume the trial started at April 22nd. So the testing you described when you were talking about aligning clocks and GPS, that occurred after April 22nd, correct?
Correct, it did.
Now let's go on to another topic. Let's talk about professional credentials. You know what I mean by the term credentials?
Yes, I do.
Professional credentials are important in any profession, correct?
Correct.
And they're important in your forensic examiner profession as well.
Correct.
Your forensic scientists and examiners are no different than any other professional, that credentials are important. And your profession requires you to provide curriculum vitae laying out your education, training, and background, correct?
Correct.
And it's imperative, is it not, that the information that is disseminated about your professional credentials are absolutely truthful, right?
Yes, they should be.
You say they should be. Let's continue on with that topic. You understand what's meant by the term ethics, right, generally?
Yes, yes.
And simple ethics mandate that one is truthful about their professional credentials, correct?
Correct.
And a fundamental credential is what type of college degree you hold, correct?
Correct.
People rely on those credentials, and the credentials are the foundation of your expert opinions and analyses, correct?
They can be, yes.
They can be, and they often are, correct?
Yes, they can be, depending on context.
But more often than not, they're important.
Yes, again, depending on context.
You know that not only your colleagues, but your clients, your firm clients, courts, and juries will rely on your CV and your credentials in order to make determinations about whether you're qualified to testify and your depth of your qualifications, correct?
Correct.
You provided the Commonwealth, the defense, and the court with your CV in this case, correct?
Correct.
If I can have a moment, Your Honor, I will get my first exhibits.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Welcome.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Your Honor, if I could have this marked as the next exhibit.
For identification?
For identification at this point.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm going to have it off, going to be eventually offering it into evidence, so.
Okay.
And present it to the witness.
So let's mark it for identification first.
Yep, okay.
Exhibit TT for identification.
May I present it to the witness?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Burgess,
yes.
I am presenting you with exhibit
TT for identification.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm learning not to talk while I'm walking backwards so Madam Court Reporter can hear me. So I'm presenting you with what is exhibit TT for identification. Do you recognize that document?
Yes, I do.
And what is that document?
So this document appears to be my CV.
May I approach further?
Yes.
Thank you.
And is that CV a document that you have prepared?
Yes. So that is a document that either I have prepared or the company after has prepared.
And is that a fair and accurate document?
It appears to be.
Your Honor, I offer that into evidence.
Any objection, Mr. Brennan?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
And if you could just, if you want to have the witness hold on, I have some questions.
Hold on, let's let it mark first.
Yes.
Sure.
Yep.
Exhibit 183.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Burgess, you have in front of you your CV that we just spoke about, and I'd ask you please to draw your attention to the education section where underneath in red it says BGS, and then, do I read it correctly? It says Bachelor of General Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, University of Alabama-Birmingham, Alabama-currently pursuing. Did I read that correctly?
You did read that correctly.
Thank you, sir.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Like this, Mark is the next for identification only at this point. Oh, excuse me, can I have that back on? Show Mr. Brown. Sure. May I hand it to the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to actually ask to have it marked for identification first.
Okay.
And we'll go from there.
Exhibit UU for ID.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Burgess, it's been marked. The document is Exhibit UU for identification. Could you please tell me if you recognize that?
Yes, I do recognize that.
And, sir, please describe briefly what that is.
Sure. So it is a CV as well.
Thank you. Yep. I would offer it into evidence at this time, Your Honor.
Mr. Brennan, any objection?
No, thank you.
Okay. Exhibit 184.
Thank you. I present it back to the witness, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Burgess, once you've had a fair opportunity to look at that, I have a question, and that question is simple. Is that your April 2025 CV?
Let me see. Yes, it appears to be.
Thank you. And when you've had a fair opportunity to look at it, when you can just pick your head up, sir, to let me know you're ready. I don't want to rush you, but then I have some questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So, in those two exhibits, your two CVs in front of you, am I correct that the first one is November 2024 and the second one is April 2025?
Let me see. Yes, that appears to be correct.
In both of those CVs, you indicate that you have not yet earned a bachelor's degree.
That is correct.
And you certainly have not earned a Bachelor of Science degree in any educational field according to those two CVs, right?
Correct.
And in fact, as you sit here today, you do not possess any bachelor's degree.
Correct.
And the reason, as you state, is because that bachelor's degree is currently pending. That's the term you use.
So I use currently pursuing.
Currently pursuing, yes. So you have a public profile that's published on Aperture's website, correct?
Yes, I do.
And it's in the form of a biography page?
Yes, I believe so.
In that biography page, has your education listed?
Very possible, yes.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. If I could have this marked, please, once Mr. Brennan reviews it. Thank you. Your Honor, may I have this marked as next identification in order?
Okay.
Thank you.
Exhibit BB for ID.
Thank you. May I hand it to the witness?
Yes.
I have now, Mr. Burgess, given you Exhibit BB for identification.
Okay.
You recognize that document?
Yes, I do.
And indeed, that is the bio page that's published on Aperture's website, correct?
That is what it appears to be, yes.
Now, I would like you, sir, to turn to page 2 of that document.
Okay.
And I'd like to turn your focus to the bottom of education heading. It states, am I correct, sir, BS, Mathematics, and Business Administration. Is that correct?
It does state that, yes.
And there is no qualification that's currently pending. It states BS in Mathematics and Business Administration, correct?
That's what it states there, yes.
And you do not have a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, do you?
No, I do not.
And if you click on the hyperlink for your CV on that same website, do you know where that hyperlink takes you?
No, I do not.
To any member of the public reading this, including a prosecutor, a defense attorney, a judge, or a jury, that represents that you received your Bachelor of Science in Mathematics and Business Administration, does it not?
Objection.
That's sustained, Mr.
Now, if you continue on to your photograph, are you familiar with Aperture's website that speaks about you and presents you generally?
Vaguely, yes.
Are you aware that Aperture has two hyperlinks, one that says CV and one says LinkedIn? Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am now.
And LinkedIn is a professional networking platform designed for career and business professionals to connect, share contact, find jobs, etc. Is that a fair description of LinkedIn?
Yes, it is.
And could we also conclude that it's a professional networking platform, especially for private sector firms like Aperture, that's used to attract clients or potential clients?
Yes, correct.
And potential clients include, for example, the Commonwealth of the state of Massachusetts, correct?
Correct.
And indeed, the Commonwealth is no longer, if you will, an attracted client, but it's an actual client of Aperture and you, correct?
Correct.
And that's the status of the relationship here. Aperture is a client of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in this case, right?
Correct.
So is it fair to say that your CV, especially when it's published on a LinkedIn or published on a website, is something that is published to intend to have, especially if you're in the private sector, have clients view and retain your services? That's a hope and an expectation, correct?
Yes, that is part of it.
Now, when you look at that document, when you click on, if you were to be in your office, and let's see if you're familiar with this, you click on your LinkedIn on Aperture's page, that would ordinarily take you directly to your professional LinkedIn account, correct? Isn't that what the links are there for?
Yes, I would expect so.
Are you notified when someone electronically accesses your LinkedIn account?
Not accesses, no. Are you referring to viewing?
Yes, that's a better verb,
yeah.
Viewing. Yes.
Yes.
So you're notified. Were you notified within the last 72 hours that someone from the defense accessed your publicly available or viewed your publicly available LinkedIn account?
No, I was not aware.
Are you aware that within the last 72 hours that hyperlink on Aperture's official website was disabled?
No, I was not aware.
Are you aware that now if you try to go on that link, that you can't, that it's disabled?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Do you know whether anyone from Aperture directed someone within Aperture to disable your LinkedIn account within the last 72 hours?
No, I'm not.
Have you spoken to anybody at Aperture about your LinkedIn account?
No, I have not.
Yep. Your Honor, I'd like to move VB into evidence at this time, please.
Okay. Any objection?
I can just see it.
It's this one.
Yep. That's the one I presented to you.
No objection.
Okay, thank you. Exhibit 185.
We are done with those, so sure. If I could ask those back for you, we
can get the
court reporter.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Your Honor, could I have the next one marked for identification at this point?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May I present to the witness?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Burgess, I presented to you what is marked as Exhibit WW for identification. I'd ask that you take a look at it, take a fair amount of time, and then if you could, sir, pick your head up so I could see that you're ready.
Sure.
Do you recognize that document, sir?
Yes, it appears to be a screenshot of my LinkedIn account.
Your Honor, I offer that into evidence.
Can I see you at sidebar with these?
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.